Go.
Hi, I'm Joss.
And I'm Char.
And together, we're two ladies just talking about mental health.
We come from very different backgrounds, race, family, religion, but we share one major thing in common. We both have tendencies towards anxiety and depression.
And while we don't have any mental health degrees or credentials, we do consider ourselves experts in our own mental health journeys because we live it daily.
Together, we'll share some tips, stories, and interview mental health experts and guests with lived experiences.
Because we believe that sharing stories is key to destigmatizing mental health and feeling less alone.
Join us. We're two ladies just talking about mental health.
Go.
Hi, listeners. I'm Joss from Two Ladies Just Talking About Mental Health with Joss and Char. If you're experiencing a mental health emergency or crisis, please remember these three numbers, 988. By calling or texting 988, you can speak with or chat with a mental health professional who can help you. Someone's available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. You don't have to suffer alone, and help is just three digits away. So write this down, 988. And if you don't have access to a phone, please go to your nearest emergency room for immediate care.
Hi, Joss.
Hi, Char. How are you this morning?
I'm so happy to see you.
I'm happy to see you too. And I'm happy we're doing this.
Me too. It's already been fun.
It is. So for the listeners out there, hello, my name is Jocelyn, but most people call me Joss.
And my name's Charlotte, and my friends call me Char or Char Char.
I like Char Char, but I usually just call you Char. So today's episode, we'll get right into it. The question we're asking ourselves and each other is, how do you work on a project when you have anxiety? How do you complete that project? And I think that's something that both Char and I can talk about. I'm a writer on top of being a podcaster and so many other things. But specifically in writing, I find it sometimes very difficult, and I do have several things that I want to do. But before we start, actually, Charlotte, I do have something I want you to do, because aren't we feeling a little bit of anxiety? So
yeah.
I want Charlotte to go ahead and do that thing that you're going to do, you know,
okay.
The exercise that we can, I guess, de-anxiety at the beginning.
Okay. Well, no guarantees, but my background is in dance. And so when I'm getting ready to start a new project, like even this morning, my body just responds. Like, I'm already sweating. I'm already a little jittery. My body just knows, even if it's something I'm excited about. So this is how I prep for a meeting or a Zoom call or anything that my body's getting nervous about. You know, as we're discussing, as we know in our own bodies, anxiety is real.
Oh my God. Yes, anxiety is real.
It's not made up. It's not in our heads. Please don't gaslight us. Anxiety is real. So there are some physical things that we can do to help with that. I just kind of made up. It's from a theater exercise warm up. I call shake it off. So you're just going to shake one hand in the air for 8 counts, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Other side, other arm, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. You can shake one foot, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Other foot, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. And then I like to stand up and shake my booty.
Oh,
because it makes me laugh. 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. And then if you want to add a little sprinkle on top, you do the yoga lion's roar, where you stick out your tongue, you inhale. Yeah. So you take a big inhale, and on the exhale, you stick out your tongue. It feels weird, but to me, The shaking off is like shake a dog shaking off the water. I'm shaking off the stress. I'm shaking off the nerves. And when I shake my booty, I laugh and I'm in a better mood.
I love it.
So listeners,
I think we do need to talk about these during episodes too, because obviously today's a big day. It's our first episode, and a lot of prep went into that. last night, there was a lot of anxiety. We are very grateful that we do have a production advisor who has helped us to at least prep, because otherwise we were just going to start this morning and, oh my God, we would have made a mistake and been
and that would have been okay, but I'm glad, you know, the topic for today, how do you start a new project when you have anxiety?
Yeah.
Came up because last night we had anxiety about starting a podcast.
Exactly.
Josh, do you want to explain what happened?
Well, I also, we have audio on this so we can prove to our listeners this really happened. We started recording. I thought that I was going to be cute and put on a background, like some kind of little background on the back of my Zoom.
Yeah.
Charlotte thought it was a great idea for us to, maybe that would be part of the episode, is like this visual of how I'm feeling today. Well, then shortly after this happened, the computer froze completely. I couldn't move my mouse. I couldn't, the keyboard didn't work, anything. So Charlotte had no idea what was going on. She was on the other side. But of course, I don't know what's going on with Charlotte. So immediately a person who has anxiety is thinking, oh my God, I just screwed up this whole thing. They're never going to forgive me. And then furthermore, I think Charlotte and I was already thinking like, maybe Charlotte doesn't think I really want to do this thing. So I was like worried, like she thinks I'm flaking. She thinks it's not going to work out. We already have anxiety. Oh my God. And then every thought was bringing more anxiety. So Charlotte didn't know this, but I closed the computer because the fan started going on the computer. I had no idea why the fan was going on. I closed the computer and I put it in the freezer. And then I shut the door of the freezer. And then I realized, like, actually, I think that's going to mess up the computer. Oh, so I pulled it out. When I got out, the computer clearly had a little bit of condensation on, or whatever they call that.
Uh-huh.
I wiped it off, came back to the table where I am. And Charlotte was texting me very nicely, but I was still believing that she thinks that I'm joking. So I wiped it up. Then she says, turn it off. But I couldn't turn it off initially. So then I Googled on my phone. There were a lot of things happening. This all happened within probably like 3 minutes, 4 minutes, Charlotte.
Yes, I had no idea. I think we should definitely include screenshots of your Google search history from that moment. The irony is we're having anxiety about making a podcast about anxiety. But you know what? We're doing it anyway. Because as people with anxiety, we know sometimes we have to push through.
Yeah.
And sometimes we have to say, no, not for me. But to us, this is worth pushing through.
Yeah.
Telling our stories, sharing other people's stories, interviewing people who are experts in mental health, and giving tips or getting listeners' questions, because this is why we're willing to push through the anxiety.
I think building community is so important, especially, you know, with anxiety. So even answering the question for today, for me as a writer, I wrote a book. I published it in 2022. The book is about, it's a series of stories, collection of memories that I had from my childhood when I started seeing a therapist for to treat me for suicidal ideation. I was in a really bad place, completely isolated, couldn't leave my house really for anything other than work, or, you know, where I had a destination to go to, because if someone said, go to the market and pick up, I don't know, chicken, I would be thinking, how can I also get pills to commit suicide? Or, So I was in just a really bad place. It was a really bad place. I'm very blessed that I'm out of that place. But when I started seeing a therapist, which is, the anxiety of actually seeing a therapist was a lot because I come from a family of nine kids. My parents are, extremely religious, which also, contributed to a lot of my anxiety and reasonings for not getting help, for my anxiety. But I was dealing with a lot of depression at that time. My body, and I think our bodies all do different things with anxiety, which is, as we're talking about in the episodes, my body learned to forget things. So I have an amazing memory. I think people that know me know that my memory is like one of my, like, it's a talent of mine. I usually remember everyone's name. I remember their backstories. I remember all these things. At that time, it was like childhood trauma that I had experienced. I didn't realize that I had forgotten a lot of these things. So as I would leave a therapy session each week, it was almost as if a flood of memories started coming back each week of literally the stories in this book.
Wow, that you had forgotten before,
Yes, it
and
was
that
like my brain was
therapy
like, It was like my brain
unlocked.
was explaining, like, this is why you're suicidal. Remember when this
Wow.
happened? This is why you're suicidal. Remember when that happened? And the thing about being depressed and being a child and dealing with, kind of anxiety and depression, and I swung between the two of those, a lot. And then as a child, I think I lost a lot of my hope, as a child because there was so many things that were happening to me as a child that were just difficult. Not the kind of abuse that people would think, like, some people are like, oh, I don't think it was that bad, that big of a deal. But when you're in your head and you have anxiety, the smallest things, and I think also, Shar, and I think we've talked about this before, as a person with anxiety, you're very observant. Like, you observe things and you feel things that no one else in the room feels. You pay attention to body language. You pay attention to not the words that are coming out of someone's mouth, but everything that comes along with that situation. Someone could say words that seem like they're not offensive, but then you hang on to those words.
Yeah,
And
because you're
so,
hypervigilant.
yes.
You're in survival mode. It is a gift to be so perceptive, because a lot of times that means we can pick up on vibes or like check in with someone later, like, are you okay? And just notice your body language with, but I wish I could turn it off sometimes, because it's that hypervigilance that then you come home and you're just wiped out.
Because it's like you've been on shift of being a watch out
Yes.
all day, right? It feels like you're on, your shift. I finished my shift and now I'm going home. And the only way that you can really finish the shift, I don't know about you, Charlotte, but to me, I need a lot of alone time because I am so busy paying attention to other, even if I'm having a conversation one-on-one with another person at home, I'm still thinking I need to consider that person, and am I saying it right? Am I doing it right? Am I offending anybody? Am I, So there is a lot of time that I have to spend by myself,
To reset.
to reset. So even with, finishing projects, I had to spend a lot of time by myself. Obviously, as a writer, you do spend a lot of time by yourself, which is probably why I like writing, so much, because it is a time for you to be by yourself. But that particular project, because it was so personal and because I had to, write so vividly about these experiences that were causing the trauma that, resulted in the anxiety and depression that I have. I think that was difficult. So luckily, I would say what I needed to get through that project was one, support. Like, my sister Ollie was super supportive. I wrote every day, literally, for the whole year of 2021, which was a crazy year, okay? Because it was
Very
COVID.
crazy. Talk about mental health,
Oh my God, yeah. And we
bubbling up.
lost family members that died of COVID. So it was, that year was insane. I wrote every day that year, every day. And I was only able to get through it because Ollie made dinner every day and she would bring it to my apartment and say, this is what we're having for dinner. And she'd plop my food down next to me. And I was working remotely, almost exclusively. So I was in my apartment all day. So literally, I would switch from the computer that I was working all day with work and helping students and saying life is going to be so much better. But I was going through it, especially as a Black person in COVID. I mean, it was just, it was crazy. And then I switched over and would come over to the same table and then write, you know, and rewrite and fix things that I had written. So I would say one of the most important things was support. You know, that was essential for me, having someone that is not judgmental, not having someone who also put the pressure on me to make sure that it was done a certain way. I mean, Ollie gave me gentle pressure of like, you said you were supposed to write today. What do you need from me? Because you said you're going to write. And sometimes I would be like, she doesn't even understand. I have a blank right now. I'm drawing a blank right now. She doesn't get it. But it did give me a push that was strong enough for me to keep going forward. Some nights I would, you know, even though I was supposed to be writing, I would be like, I don't have anything new to add. So I would read things that I had written before and just read and go, okay, I don't know what I can change there, but I know I need something. And then when I would sleep at night, or if I would go, for me, my mind starts working creatively when I'm working out. So I work out and then, you know, and then things would come to me. It was like problem solving throughout that process. So definitely support. And then crying a lot. Like, I needed to cry. I needed to cry.
Yeah, it's a physical and emotional release. Like, it's like a cleanse. Like, the water comes out. I think it's healthy. It's a natural response. And a lot of times I feel relief after I'm done crying. Because I just needed to, again, that physical. As a dancer or dance teacher, I need that physical release of the emotions. So, and it also sounds like the support, like emotional support where you didn't feel judged, and then concrete support in terms of she was feeding you dinner. So you had some of your basic needs met. So you could just sit and write. And then also this kind of support / loving accountability of like, you said you were going to write today. So what's going on? And I think that's really interesting that you said if you couldn't write, you would read. So it's like writing adjacent. You would read what you had already written. So you're still kind of in that zone, or to reset, you know, starting a new project, you don't know where to start. You go work out and your brain kind of is brainstorming as you work out. I have that with walking the dog. Like, I'm at a standstill, I'm hitting a wall at my desk, but then I go walk my dog and my brain kind of wanders. And a lot of times the ideas come up during that movement.
Same.
So it's like, the physical reset or the, you know, doing something adjacent so then you can start the project. Do you ever procrastinate, Joss?
All the time.
Yeah.
I mean, it's almost like that's my comfort zone sometimes. And I don't think it's always healthy, but sometimes because, and I'm a creative person and you are too, Charlotte, in some ways. Yes. For me, my creativity sometimes comes very abruptly. Like, it doesn't always come like I might be thinking, I know I have to, like the other day I was speaking for an event and I knew I was speaking for this event for like 2 months. And literally what I needed to speak about didn't come to me until, oh my God, 3 days before.
And I would have been so anxious because I'm like, what am I going to talk about? What am I going to talk about? I don't have what I, you know, I don't have a plan. I'm not in control.
Every day I was going, I don't have it. I don't have it. And I knew it was a reading. So I knew, okay, I'm going to read a few chapters in my book, but I wanted it to be significant for the audience or whatever. So for me, sometimes I thrive in procrastination. I am a person where if there's a hard deadline and it's something that isn't creative. So if it's work and I got to fill out this form and present, you know, and submit this by a certain day, that kind of work that is not creative, doesn't matter. I don't have to procrastinate on that. But when it comes to creative things, and I will say this, when it's something that has to do with me, because I'm so codependent, oftentimes I procrastinate on what's best for me.
Oh, interesting. What do you mean by that? Like, you put somebody else first, so exactly. You put off what you need.
Mm-hmm. So if it's like, oh, yeah, I needed to go to the market and pick up like essentials for some reason, I will forget what I need for myself, but I'll remember what everybody else needed that day.
I think it happened yesterday. You were going to run because you're training for a half marathon, but you had to take your sister to the airport, so you didn't get a run in.
Yep. But I needed to sleep. And so I think that's something too, that's part of my, you know, I can't complete a project if I'm exhausted. I'm a person that I require a lot of sleep.
Me too.
I don't often get the sleep I need though. I almost feel like I don't always get the sleep that I need because my day is filled with so many things. So I can't say that I'm an expert at managing my anxiety. I do the best I can. I think I'm way better than I used to be. But I will say, like, when it comes down to getting a project done, depending on who's the project for, that's the really weird question that I could even say, like, is the project for someone else? Yes, I can get it done very quickly and efficiently, and everyone's going to be happy.
Yep.
But if the project is about me, if the project is about doing something that's best for, like, myself, maybe it's a little bit, I struggle. So the book was really something that was for me. That was something that I was going to do. This was something that I needed to accomplish. But work, other work, you know, sometimes takes precedence over what I need to do in my own life. So I, you know, a lot of meditation. I did. Yep. I did a lot of meditation, a lot of mindfulness exercises, a lot of affirmations. Mm-hmm. A lot of self-help books, you know, I mean, just, you know, I try my best to, one, be around people who are encouraging, who are, you know, protective of my mental health, being very, and I know this is difficult for some people, and specifically in the Black community, we struggle with this labeling of, you know, you have a mental health issue, something's going on with you, and you're having, you know, depression or anxiety or whatever it is. A lot of people are very uncomfortable talking about that. I feel like because I've been so vocal about it, people are very protective. When I say that I need a break, people are protective. So you have
like
to find
respond,
that.
They respond, like they listen to you when you say
they listen and they say, you know, Jocelyn, maybe go, I don't want to give you anything else. I have a really great boss now. Mm-hmm. I haven't always had that kind of boss, but I have a really good boss now. But obviously I've written my book. She's read my book. Mm-hmm. She knows a lot about me now, and she's very protective of making sure I don't get overwhelmed. So like good. I said, I think sometimes it's important for us to share that information with people who are safe. Obviously not everyone's safe. Mm-hmm. But I think that I'm so grateful that I've been able to create a support system. I'm saying in almost every aspect of my life where people look out for me, people, and I think I encourage them as well. I don't think it's just a one-way street. I think when you're in an environment where people really genuinely care about you and your well-being, and they think that you're very important in their lives, so that was helpful for me too. Like I said, Ollie Jackson, my nephew was one of the driving forces too, because I didn't want him. Obviously, mental health issues are genetic.
Yes.
And so I was like, if he goes through, you know, the kinds of issues that I go through, I don't want him to ever feel like he was by himself. I felt like I was alone, you know, throughout this whole process, because my sister Ollie doesn't have the same issues that I have. So she, you know, she's a positive person. She thinks positively all the time. It's very easy for her to think positively. Mm-hmm. I struggle with that. I'm constantly like skeptical of whether or not a situation can turn out well or not. And so I think obviously our thoughts really do drive us. And so she's always had it easier when it comes down to that. So I always felt like I was the problem. I just couldn't get my shit together, you know, like
something's wrong with me.
And I don't want Jackson to feel that way. So there were several factors that could push it. I mean, some things were external. Some things, a lot of it was I obviously it all depended on me and whether or not I was gonna, pick up habits and be habitual about taking care of myself. And I think once we take care of ourselves, it does help and it demands that other people also take care of us.
I like
So,
that. I like
what about
that. It's
you? I mean, what about
an
you? I mean,
well,
please.
let me just repeat that because I really like it. When we take care of ourselves, it demands that other people also take care of us. I really think that's powerful. I really think that's powerful. I mean, part of why we wanted to do this podcast is we both have different upbringings. We have a lot of differences in our lives, but we have this mental health journey in common. And, in the course of the podcast, we'll get into how we've known each other for 10 years.
At least.
But we lost touch and then we got back together. We got coffee and you opened up and said, I have a tendency towards depression. And you opening up gave me permission to say, me too. And then we realized, we both kind of swing between this anxiety and depression. We never knew this about each other. But I think too, your openness in talking about it gives other people permission and safety to talk about it. And I do think that's a gift of yours.
Thank you.
Yeah. And before we move on, I do want you to say the title of your book so people can go get it. Because let me tell you, listeners, it is so beautifully written. It is visceral. It is moving. You feel like you're standing right next to little Jocelyn when she's on the playground and the bird falls out of the tree. Get the book, read it. It is called.
One of Nine, a memoir. It has a very long subtitle, which a lot of
Oh,
people,
there
when I've gotten
it
feedback,
is.
they're like, yeah,
Hold it
here
up.
she is. Here she
Yeah.
is.
For those of
One
you
of
who watch
Nine.
the video, and then we'll also post a picture.
One of Nine, a memoir, a
Which
collection of
geode
true
are you on
stories.
the cover, Joss?
That's a good question. I feel like I'm the green one, but I'm not 100%.
Okay,
I
I
feel
was
like I'm a
guessing
green one.
the pink one next to it because,
This one? This one?
yeah. Or is that
I.
purple? Because when one of your stories, you said you wanted like a little pink geode.
Okay, you know what's so interesting? I had a coworker so sweet who read my book, and she sends me in the mail. This, and it was
Oh.
literally the stone.
Oh,
It's called
wow.
Rhodonite. Rhodonite. I wear it. I wear it. At, yeah.
Oh, wow. You finally got
Now I
it.
know what it is. She was
Oh
just trying to save my life again, but she literally did the research. I think
that.
it's this. I think it's this. And literally, I was like, it is Rhodonite. And very interesting what this, what
Wow.
the spiritual,
Yeah.
powers of it are. It's like all the things I needed at that moment.
Like
All the
what?
things. I have to
Oh,
find the, I have the little
you'll
thing, but it's a
okay,
whole
well,
list of like
why don't we
things.
take a break?
Yes, thank
And
you.
then we'll take a break. You look up what those are, and then we'll come back and chat a bit more about how we start projects, how we push through projects with anxiety.
I love it.
Okay, see you in a few minutes.
Okay.
All right, welcome back, everyone. Joss, did you find out what that stone's name and meaning are?
Yes. Okay,
Okay.
so Char, this is what the stone is. The stone is called rhodonite. It even tells you, this is very interesting. It has a numerical vibration, and guess what the number is?
Nine?
Yes.
Like your book, like you have nine
One of nine.
siblings?
Isn't
One
that
of
weird?
nine. Oh
Yeah.
my gosh.
It's the heart chakra, which is totally my issue with codependence, right? codependency or whatever.
Well,
Okay.
we could also call it a positive that you're very loving, you have an open heart. Why jump right to codependence?
Because when you have anxiety, this is what we do.
Okay, got it. You also need friends to point out the other perspective.
And that's important. Balance is everything. Yeah. So these are the things. Rhodonite is a stone of compassion, an emotional balancer, and clears away emotional wounds and scars from the past, and that nurtures love. It stimulates, clears, and activates the heart. Rhodonite grounds energy, balances yin and yang, and aids in achieving one's highest potential. It heals emotional shock and panic.
Wow.
Everything I needed at the moment because I panic.
But and also because your book was like a remembering, kind of a cleansing, writing these stories? Was it?
It was. A huge
it was
release.
Painful, but also
super
healing.
Yeah. In the end, I mean, during the process, no, because I was worried about how my family was going to think, specifically my parents. There were a lot of, again, when you're reliving your childhood, you're also reliving who you were as your child in your childhood. Right. And so even though I am a person that really doesn't, I don't have as much concern for people's opinions anymore. Mm-hmm. When you go back to who you were at that time to tell the story truthfully, you have to go back and be who you were at the moment.
Yeah.
You know,
and when I think back to like little anxious Charlotte, who didn't even know the word anxiety, but just knew that she had a tummy ache before she had to go to social events, or she felt kind of weird and wiggly and like, now I would say out of body, but she didn't have that language. I feel really sad. Mm-hmm. I feel really sad that for all the times that I didn't know it was anxiety when it was, I didn't have that language, or I knew it was anxiety, but I wasn't getting help and I was suffering. Mm-hmm. I look back on when now I'm on medication, and that can be a whole other episode. But for me, it was life-changing in a positive way. Mm-hmm. And I wish I had gone on it sooner. So some experiences I look back and I'm like, oh, poor 20-something year old Charlotte suffering from anxiety. You go back and you revisit yourself and it is emotional.
Mm-hmm. But in some ways, when you're talking about looking at little Charlotte, don't you feel that looking back at who you were is a way also of being proud of yourself for who you are now?
Definitely.
Like, is it healing? Yeah. I feel like it was very healing in that way.
And
going
I
back
feel
and looking at myself.
Grateful that I have more education and resources and language, and you know, that idea of like name it to tame it. Like, I have a diagnosis. I know I have clinical anxiety and clinical depression. You know, that actually, those diagnoses empower me and help me move forward. So I also feel grateful, you know, looking back makes me feel grateful for where I am now and how much you and I have accomplished.
Right.
You know, just on a resume level, look at what we've done despite our anxiety and depression. So I look back and I'm proud that I was a dancer. I'm proud that I got on stage. I'm proud that I graduated high school despite crippling stress and anxiety. I'm proud that I graduated college and ended up with lifelong friends. I've lived in two different countries.
Right.
You know, and all of this was despite the anxiety. So I am proud that, you know, part of what we've talked about is when you start a new project and you have anxiety, when do you push through? Because you know it's worth it. Like, we know the podcast is worth it. So we're going to push through the discomfort.
We are.
And then when do we say, this is too much on my nervous system, I have to peace out?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. When do you decide, and how do you decide? One, you know, how does anxiety show up for you when you're starting a project? And then I guess my other question is, what, like, do you decide which projects you go forward with based on your feelings? Is it based on, you know, who that project is for? I mean, how does anxiety also make the decision?
Right. Well, it's definitely a factor. It's a factor. Mm-hmm. I think when I'm starting a new project, the way anxiety shows up for me is also procrastination. And I don't remember where I heard this, but I heard that procrastination, I always thought, you know, in terms of the sympathetic nervous system, which is the amygdala in our brains, which is fight or flight, those like survival instincts. I remember sympathetic S for survival. Those survival impulses of fight or flight, there's also freeze. So I was kind of thinking of procrastination as me being in a freeze state because I cannot start. But I don't remember who said this to me, but it was helpful. They were like, or you could look at procrastination as a flight state. You're fleeing, you're kind of like avoiding, you're procrastinating to flee the discomfort or flee, put things off so you don't have to deal with it. So I definitely procrastinate. It doesn't feel good. I know it's not, I don't think it works for me, because the anxiety just keeps mounting and my brain just keeps counting down. Well, it's due. Well, it's due. Well, it's due. Mm. That's why I think with our podcast, our kind of way to start was to just start. We're like, we just need to start. Mm-hmm. We need to not put it off. We could talk about this for ages and never record anything, or we could just start and there'll be mistakes and it'll be bumpy and but we will have started. So sometimes I think for me, I just need to start. Mm. My mom has always said that since I was a young kid, I wanted to know how to do things before I learned them.
Same.
You too.
Uh-huh.
And I wanted to be perfect at them before I learn them. But then if you're like, oh, well, this essay has to be perfect, then you never start writing.
Right. Oh, my God. I agree with that. And I totally relate.
The perfectionism.
Yes. And I always thought that was my mother who always kind of made me feel like everything had to be perfect. But there was this inner voice that was always telling me, you have to be the expert before you even try.
Exactly.
It's weird. It is a weird thing. Exactly.
And I don't know if that's like a way to control the situation or like not feel vulnerable, but then we don't start anything. So then when I started like to keep going with the writing analogy, it's like, well, I just need to start and like diarrhea, word vomit on the page and I can edit later. That kind of like took the pressure off a little bit, like decreased the high stakes of like, I just need to get something on paper and maybe it's total garbage, but I can reshape it later. That kind of would bring the pressure down for me.
Mm-hmm. And that became real for me when I started realizing that rewriting is actually the whole process of writing. Oh. Like the rewrite is really what the end product is. It's never, you know, the skeleton you wrote down at the beginning or the diarrhea, I guess, that you're saying that we did. The diarrhea never makes it to the final stage. Like we're not presenting diarrhea to people.
What a good analogy for life, right? It's not the rewrite plan that we have. It's all the rewrite. And I think sometimes for me, when I'm having an anxious moment, I actually reframe it or try. It doesn't always work. You know, the tips I gave in the beginning, it doesn't always work for me.
Right. Same.
The meditation doesn't always work.
Yep. Yep.
But if I can kind of get there, do those tips or reframe it mentally before I've spun out, it can slow the anxiety down. So the reframe I'm thinking of is, if I made a mistake or I said the wrong thing, there's always room for repair. And that's kind of what I tell myself. There's always room for a rewrite. If I offended somebody, I can always go back to them and apologize. I can always explain. So for me, that, you know, because otherwise I'm going, well, I said this, and then they think this, and then this and this, and then all of a sudden I'm the worst person in the world. Mm-hmm. The way I kind of stop that, and sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't, but it's like, okay, well, if that does happen, you always have an opportunity to make amends, to rewrite.
Yep.
And to repair those relationships or that situation.
Right.
So, you know, for me with dealing with anxiety, a lot of the time I learned this with one therapist, like I have to catch it at the beginning of the spin out. Because it feels like a spinning top and it feels like a tornado that's out of control, or it feels like a car that's stuck in the sand that they're just spinning their wheels and they're not going anywhere. And once I'm there, I'm kind of gone. I don't have a tip for that yet.
No, that's the same. You know what? There's a book out there called The Upward Spiral. Did I mention this to you before?
Did. I still need to read it. Maybe we'll read it with our listeners at some
point. It's
awesome. Do like a book club.
Because that's what it's about. It's really about that idea. Mostly it's dealing with depression. You know, the man that wrote the book is, he's dealing specifically with depression. But I think this works with all thoughts, because I feel like, you know, people say anxiety, you know, is super, you know, going up. I think it's very much a spiraling downward whenever you are going from one thought that is like, oh my goodness, I screwed up. Then the next one was like, everyone's going to know.
Oh yeah. Down, like, down, yeah. Down.
And then it's like, you're never going to get better. See, you always do stuff like this.
You're a piece of shit.
Yeah. You should just run away and never come back. I mean,
I'm laughing out of recognition. I'm laughing because you're saying exactly what I think. And you're right. It's like drilling down until the conclusion we arrive at is like, I'm the worst person in the world.
Okay. And this book is training you to be like, the second you're talking, I like the way you explain it, but he's saying the second you realize that thought is going in the wrong direction, you counter it with a thought that's
opposite.
Before
it goes out of control.
And so I've learned to like try to, you know, rewire my thoughts. Even like when I start having a thought like, you just screwed up, I have to immediately go, you're human. You know,
like be your
you
own
almost
best
never
friend.
Yes. And I think being a consistent person, people will forgive you if you've consistently always done well. I mean, I'm a person where I usually, you know, people trust me, people believe me, people know that I usually have good intention. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, all of those things, we have to be honest with ourselves about what our strengths are, which can be a difficulty when you're dealing with self-esteem issues. You deal with, you know, just a low idea of yourself, and you're constantly fighting that perfectionism inside yourself. So that book was super helpful for me. I have learned that I can't spend a lot of time with people who are negative. Mm-hmm. I can't spend time with like people who, I don't know. I have to be careful about people who put the thought in my head. As soon as I have a good, you know, like something happens that's negative and they're like, let's just go down the negative path. I can't do it. Because for me, I know that's detrimental for my mental health. For that person, they can probably bring themselves out of it. That's what brings them joy. For some people, literally, like that's their thing.
I mean, I'm an outward processor. So for me, mm-hmm. I have to process negative things out loud. But you're right. I should consider my audience. Like, you know, if the person is going to like, you know, and obviously it's up to the listener to determine, I can't actually hear this right now, because it's like, I'm very susceptible to going down with you, and you might mm-hmm. bounce back right after this conversation, and I'm going to stay here for like 3 days.
Yeah.
So I respect that. I think.
But it's hard.
Yeah.
It's hard for me too. Okay. You and I, we're friends, right? We're having a conversation about some craziness that's going on in the world or in our lives, right?
Yeah.
And obviously, there is no positive in it. Like, you know, sometimes there isn't. You can't be like, oh, this horrible thing, there's something good about it. Yeah. There's a lot of people who want there to be this silver lining.
Yeah, sometimes there's
some things are. Yeah, sometimes there isn't.
It's just bad.
I've had to learn to go, that's what it is. And if I don't want to be in that situation, I got to walk away. But sometimes I struggle because I want this person also mm-hmm. to be able to have this conversation with me. So again, anxiety controls whether or not I allow for it or not.
But sometimes. You have to protect yourself too and trust that if that person needs support, they can get support elsewhere. Because you have to take care of yourself.
And it's a case by case basis. Sometimes I can manage. Sometimes I have it.
Well, that's just it. It's like mm-hmm. with the tips, like sometimes I can cut off the spinning out at the start by doing these like exercising or taking a shower or resetting or doing a power pose. And other times I can't. Mm. And I think that is like, you know, something we can talk about another episode is like having anxiety about being anxious. Like I'm anxious that I'm going to be anxious. Like on my wedding day, I was so worried that I was going to be anxious ahead of the wedding day. My main worry was that I was going to be so anxious, overstimulated, and maxed out on people that I wasn't going to enjoy my wedding day. That I was anxious about my mental health ruining the day for me. Luckily, it did not, because I prepped with my therapist ahead of time about what we could do beforehand, during, after. And I was able to be present. But it's kind of this like, anxiety is like, oh, is it going to happen now? Am I going to get anxious now? I'm going to spin out now. Am I going to be able to access my tools? What if I can't access my tools? So maybe that's another topic we can get into. But for today,
this was really amazing. I'm so
talking with you.
Always, Char. You know how it is.
Yeah.
And I think it's just, you know, we have our differences in how we manage things. But I think in the end, all we really want to do is live our lives, manage it, live another day. I mean,
suffer less. Yeah. Dare I say, find some enjoyment. You know, and maybe telling our stories, like with your book or the stories we share on this podcast or the guests we invite, maybe help others along the way, even if it's just like the content resonating with one listener and them feeling less alone.
And even if you are physically alone or you are alone, you don't have anyone to talk to, I always like to mention this. You can text, you can call. If you're in the United States, I believe 988 is the number that if you're having some difficult thoughts, you can always reach out to that number. Trying
to give text tips to 988.
You can text it, you can chat with it, you can call 988. That's the new number, I guess, for, medical emergencies kind of situations where you need to talk to a mental health professional. And the reason why it's only three numbers, because when you're stressed out and you have an anxiety, remember it used to be like a 1-800 number. Who's going to remember that?
Oh, I black out. I literally black out when I'm anxious.
So 988 is the number. That's the number.
Cool. Thank you so much, Joss.
No
Well,
problem. Thank you.
listeners, this is our first episode and we're figuring out the shape as we go. But at some point, we'd also really love for you to write in and give us your questions or share your stories with us or your tips or your experiences or what hasn't worked. We'd love to hear from you as well. So that's definitely on our minds moving forward. Okay. And until next time.
Until next time.
Bye,
Bye.
Joss.
Bye, Shar.
Go.
Hi, listeners. This is Joss from Two Ladies Just Talking About Mental Health. I want to remind you that if you are experiencing a mental health crisis, please call or text 988 or go to the nearest emergency room for immediate care. And maybe you're not in crisis, but you need a therapist to help you on a more frequent basis, but you're concerned about the cost. Here's a tip. When you're reaching out for therapists, be sure to ask them if they offer their services on a sliding scale, meaning that they can lower their rate to better accommodate your financial situation. And if you're looking for a therapist who specializes in working with minority identities, there are collectives and organizations out there that have you covered too. Here's a couple of those resources. For Black women or girls, therapyforblackgirls.com. If you're looking for a therapist of color, you can go to nopsych.com. That's nopsych.com. For South Asian therapists, there's southasiantherapist.org. And for LGBTQ+ identities, the National Queer and Trans Therapists of Color Network, which is NQTTCN.com. If you are parenting as an LGBTQ+ person, rainbowfamilies.org. Again, when you contact a therapist, please ask, do they offer their services on a sliding scale? That will help reduce your financial burden. Blessings to you on your search. May you find a therapist that meets your needs.